From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In late January, an 84-year-old Thai man named Vicha Ratnapakdi was viciously assaulted while on his daily neighborhood walk. A man ran across the street and without provocation slammed the elder Thai down onto the sidewalk, killing him. Family members insist that his killing was part of a disturbing pattern of anti-Asian hate spreading across the United States since last year, when then-President Donald Trump began referring to COVID-19 as the China virus. More recently, Denny Kim, an Air Force veteran, was attacked and beaten badly in Koreatown, Los Angeles, as his assailants hurled racist insults at him, including the words Chinese virus. Mr. Kim survived but has facial injuries. Although President Joe Biden has signed an executive order condemning anti-Asian hate, there appears to be little end in sight to the spate of attacks. My guest is Manjusha Kulkarni, co-founder of Stop AAPI Hate and executive director of Asian Pacific Policy and Planning Council. Welcome to the program, Manjusha.
Thank you so much, Sonali. Thank you for having me on.
So, of course, we have a history in this country of anti-Asian hatred and racism going back decades, centuries, but this new sort of wave that we're seeing right now, do you see it as coinciding, because it's coinciding not just with the pandemic, but with Trump's reign, as part of this wave of resurgent white supremacy in the United States?
We do see what's happening across the country as part of a resurgency against white supremacy. There's no doubt about it. And when we started Stop AAPI Hate last March, there was already that emergence related specifically to COVID-19, where individuals were being physically attacked in some cases, verbally assaulted in many others, with language that the president himself used: Wuhan virus, China virus, China plague, and Kung flu. And in many cases, they were even weaponizing the president himself to say that Trump will F you, Trump will send you back to your country. And so we know from 2,800 reports that we received between March and December that really what we're seeing is the newest iteration of anti-Asian American hate and racism in the United States.
Wow, that's a pretty large number. Are there any geographic concentrations? The two incidents that I mentioned in my introduction were both in California, one in the Bay Area, one in Southern California, where we are based. Is there concentration of attacks? I mean, California is supposed to be liberal.
Well, we have seen that there are more reports coming from those places where there are larger numbers of Asian Americans. And California, of course, having the largest number proportionately, does have significantly more reports than other states. But really, what we have seen over the nine-month period is that hate is happening all across the country. We've received reports from 47 states and the District of Columbia. It's in rural areas, urban, and no locale really is immune to what's happening. But yes, in fact, it is happening here in what we consider to be a progressive state.
What forms are the attacks happening in? I know that you've released reports. There's one report specifically on LA County. Can you give me a sense? And of course, you know, the numbers obscure the fact that this is happening to actual people, and each incident, of course, is unique. But if you can give us a sense of the pattern of attacks that take place.
Yes. So what our data is showing us is that the vast majority of incidents are not hate crimes. And that's important to remember when we begin to look at policy solutions. Certainly some of the most horrific, including those that you mentioned from the Bay Area and even here in Southern California, do appear to involve a criminal element. But what we see in our data is about 90 to 95% are hate incidents. And those are largely involve verbal harassment, so name calling, comments that are made, followed by about 9 to 10%, which are civil rights violations. This includes workplace discrimination, as well as refusal of service, vandalism, housing discrimination, and then, of course, the physical assaults, which make up about the same percentage, just under 10%. So that's really what the data is telling us. And also that it's mostly, when we look at the sites of the incidents, about 40% happen at private businesses, followed by public parks, public streets, and public transit. So these are things, of course, that we need to think about moving forward when we really demand action from our lawmakers.
So basically places where the public congregates.
Exactly.
The incident of Vicha Ratnapakdi has really mobilized a lot of people. There have been protests, vigils. That particular incident, very little is known because we don't know, you know, the victim died. We don't know directly what the motives of the attacker were. But the community where this elderly man lived is convinced that this was part of that pattern of hate crimes that we're seeing. Tell me about the effect that this particular incident has had, why it's almost a turning point.
Well, you're exactly right that with a number of these incidents, it's very difficult to tell, especially early on, what the individual motives are. And because, unfortunately, he passed away, we don't know some of those details. But we do see these trends and patterns. And so that is obviously worrisome. It's causing tremendous fear and trepidation in our communities. And especially, you know, because that they're happening to so many of our elderly community members. We're worried for our parents, our grandparents who are experiencing this, and especially around the Lunar New Year, when they were out and about buying groceries to, you know, cook the feast of the new year and, you know, spend time with family members. And so it's really unfortunate that these took place at that time, which should be really a time of joy and celebration, and did not end up being such.
The other incident that I mentioned with Mr. Denny Kim, an Air Force veteran in Koreatown, it seemed a lot clearer case of a hate crime. He was beaten, in his face. There were two attackers. He says he survived because his friend was there to help him and screamed and shouted and tried to push off the attackers. And he says that the kinds of things that were said to him were racist insults, including the words Chinese virus. Do you think that Trump, through his language last year, essentially green-lit attacks by his base, by members of his base, against the Asian community?
President Trump absolutely fanned the flames of hate with this type of rhetoric. And not only that, unfortunately, it was part of a concerted effort of many in the GOP. They issued actually a 55-page memo early on that recommended to candidates running for office how they could use that type of language in blaming China for COVID-19, and how they should respond even to reporters if they were asked or challenged for making racist comments. So really, we believe that President Trump has put individuals in our community in harm's way. And we see that with incidents like the one unfortunately experienced by Mr. Kim.
So tell me about the executive order that Joe Biden signed. I mean, of course, the symbolism is important. When you have a leader at the very top fanning the flames of hate, it has a big impact now that Trump is no longer president. And perhaps more importantly, his Twitter feed is not accessible to him. No, I shouldn't say more importantly, just as importantly, perhaps, that he can't speak out and continue fanning the hate. Does Joe Biden's order go beyond the symbolic aspect of a leader saying we won't tolerate this anymore. What exactly does the order say?
Well, the order does a couple important things. You mentioned, of course, the symbolism, and it's so important that we condemn the racist rhetoric that's been used by the former president and, as I mentioned, so many others in government office. And then what it does also is it directs the Department of Justice to work with communities to really combat this hate. And so we're hopeful. We think this is a promising step. Once Merrick Garland gets approved and
as a new attorney general.
Yes, exactly. And Vinita Gupta and so many others take office, we look forward to opportunities to work with them toward community solutions. And let me say too, these are really broad-based, comprehensive solutions that look at stronger civil rights enforcement, in addition to perhaps some of the enforcement mechanisms of the FBI and data tracking and law enforcement. So we really want to solve this problem overall and not simply limit it to solutions around law enforcement and hate crimes.
Can Biden do more? You know, there is certainly the issue of the symbolism. The Asian community is the demographics of his cabinet appointments are similarly symbolically important. You know, we have our first vice president who is half Indian, half South Asian, and all of those things certainly do matter. But still, those are symbols. I mean, in order to stop hate crimes, that requires a sort of systematic, bottom up approach to addressing a very, very deep-seated notion in this country that those people who are seen as other don't belong here. I mean, one of the things that a lot of people have called upon is for Biden to take stronger action on immigration. Yet, you know, he just reopened a migrant detention facility for teenagers recently. The green card bans that disproportionately affect Asian families are still in place. So couldn't he do a lot more?
Absolutely. I think we really are going to look to the Biden administration as well as members of Congress to take some decisive steps. A lot of work needs to happen because not only did the Trump administration engage very deliberately in the racist rhetoric, they also issued a number of policies that were detrimental to the community, not only in the immigration realm, but also with public benefits and public charge, outlawing essentially use of federal funds for diversity and inclusion trainings. So there are a whole host of actions that can be taken moving forward. One that we think really has some promise is expanding civil rights protections under the Civil Rights Act and Title II specifically, which addresses public accommodations discrimination. We know that folks are getting refused service in restaurants, grocery stores, pharmacies, places that they need to go to engage in the activities of daily life.
They're getting refused service because of their race?
Absolutely. And so we need to see some changes. And by the way, I want to say too that these are changes that will affect all marginalized communities and not simply Asian Americans. So we know that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 impacts also African American and Latinx communities as well. So we think that some broad measures like this really are the first step to addressing this problem comprehensively.
Now, we know that the FBI keeps track of hate crimes, has an annual report that, of course, includes all hate crimes against all communities of color. But many have said that this is just not adequate enough, that the FBI really could be doing a better job of documentation. It relies on a patchwork of self-reporting from departments around the country. That's also one aspect of it, right? How important is the reporting, simply the first step after hate crime has occurred, this trend?
Well, that patchwork really is inadequate, and here's why. Number one, we know that the amount of reporting of hate crimes is really low, and that's true even for law enforcement. Much of this reporting to the FBI is voluntary, and the state auditor's report issued in California in 2017 found that in up to 50% of cases, law enforcement just failed to identify hate crimes as involving hate, essentially not identifying them all at all as a hate crime. And so there's a real opportunity there to conduct trainings and ensure better reporting on the criminal side. But you know, one thing I want to focus on is the fact that our data tells us that 90% of the incidents do not involve a crime. So while the hate crimes registry and the work of the FBI may help to address that 5 to 10%, it leaves aside the 90% or so. And we really need an infrastructure to be able to address those as well.
Going back to the incident that we started our conversation with of the 84-year-old Thai man named Vicha Ratnapakdi, a 19-year-old was arrested. I mean, that's just kind of sad. A young person, as young as 19, arrested in the as a suspect in that incident and has been charged with murder. But you know, in that case, again, it's not really clear if that case would be identified or classified as a hate crime because, as we mentioned earlier, there was, you know, we don't know what was said between the victim and the perpetrator. So it's really interesting to see whether there will be justice for this man who died and whose family, I imagine, is deeply devastated. What are the kinds of things that local authorities can do? We've talked about what the Biden administration can do, what the FBI can do, but what about mayors and you know, city and even county and state level authorities?
We believe very strongly that there are a multitude of actions that they can take. First off, we need more resources and support, especially for individuals who are limited English proficient. We know that in the United States, many of these resources have been sorely lacking. And I think also with that is education. I spoke before about training for law enforcement, but we need public education campaigns that really, you know, ensure belonging and avoid creating, you know, feelings of otherness in our communities, certainly in places like San Francisco and Oakland, where there's such large population of Asian Americans. Something like that is really unacceptable. I will point to a program here in Los Angeles that we believe is really promising, and that is the LA versus Hate program. And my organization, APCON, is really proud to be one of the 6 community-based organizations that participates in that program. One aspect of it is public education, which can be found at the website LA versus Hate. But there's also a reporting mechanism through 211 where individuals can report hate incidents in multiple languages. And the ones that involve our specific community then come to us, where we provide direct case management, help community members get the support they need, engage in civic education programs, and also leadership development. So these folks not only will not experience it again, but can be our leaders moving forward. So these kind of comprehensive approaches, I think, are really the path forward.
In terms of that cultural change that's needed? Are you heartened by the fact that there are Asian celebrities that are speaking out, using their influence, using the cachet that they have with the public to call attention to the fact that this trend of hate and these hate crimes are happening, and to implore people to take action?
It is really promising right now, and I think a step in the right direction, that these celebrities have chosen to use their platforms in such a way, because we really need the entire community. That includes not just civic leaders, not just community organizations, but also our business leaders, our celebrities, to be galvanized in this moment, because we really need urgent action on these particular incidents and issues, but we also need to be more civically engaged. And we know too often the Asian American Pacific Islander community has not been. And so in order to get, you know, more safety overall for our communities, more economic stability and well-being, better health, you know, we look at COVID numbers and how they're disproportionately affecting our community members. All of these are areas that individuals really need to speak out on and begin to really get action from our lawmakers.
Is there a place for people to report hate crimes? And of course, if one is a victim of an actual hate crime, the first thing one expectedly does is call the police or contact some authority. But if it doesn't rise to the level of what's necessarily a crime, you know, someone verbally abuses one, are there easy places to find online where one can file a report just to get it down there, just to have it documented? I mean, I've experienced verbal abuse because of the way I look and my name, and haven't even thought sometimes to document it, even as a journalist.
We recommend that folks go to stopaapihate.org. We have our form available in 12 Asian languages and also in English. And we keep identifying information confidential. You can report an incident you've experienced. And also, if you've witnessed an incident, a number of folks, even outside the community, have reported to us. That includes folks who are Latinx, African-American, as well as white, and saying, you know, look, this was inappropriate. I saw this happen, and that they wanted to share it with us. So we encourage that, certainly.
So you can be both a victim or witness to an attack and report it.
Exactly. And we've even had young people report it for their parents, their elderly parents, you know, who may not be as adept at technology. Certainly your point is an important one, which is, you know, if you are experiencing a hate crime, if you're being physically attacked in any way and your safety is jeopardized, please do call 911. They can get resources to you immediately. But efforts like ours, as well as 211 in Los Angeles, and we know that there are also rapid response networks in the Bay Area and other cities and locales as well. So we recommend stopaapihate.org, given the work that we're doing and the analysis we're able to bring to bear through our team of researchers. But we encourage folks to report wherever they feel comfortable, because we are all working together.
Right. And toward I should say solutions. That not everyone does feel comfortable, sadly, calling 911, considering right. The state of our criminal justice system. But stopaapihate.org is a good place to report incidents as well online. Manjusha, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
My guest has been Manjusha Kulkarni, co-founder of Stop AAPI Hate and executive director of the Asian Pacific Policy and Planning Council. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.